Okay, so we're looking then at Nehemiah chapter 4. We're looking at Nehemiah for a reason, that being that it is about rebuilding, renewal and revival. And as we seek to rebuild the spiritual roots, the church that used to exist in the Holm Valley, as we seek to be renewed, we look towards God to revive this place. So it has some lessons for us corporately as a church and individually as Christian believers. So it's relevant for us all. We've started to look over the last three occasions about how Nehemiah was aware that the walls were broken, and he went to King Artaxerxes and sought permission to come and rebuild the wall. Last week particularly, or the week before last, we looked at the workers on the wall. We considered that there were the priests that were on the wall, there were people of all kinds of professions, and where we left it was where they were working zealously in rebuilding the wall. They were working with all their hearts rebuilding the wall, and we concluded that as we come to serve the Lord, we should do so with all our hearts. That's where we left off last week. But by Nehemiah 4, there is some discouragement setting in. When Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah, the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What they are building, even a fox climbing up on it will break it down. Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in the land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs and the Ammonites and the people of Ashdod heard that the repairs of Jerusalem's wall had gone ahead and the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is much rubble, and we cannot rebuild the wall." All our enemies said, "Before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them, and we will kill them and put an end to their work." Then the Jews who lived near them and came and told us 10 times over, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials and the rest of the people, "Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your families, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes." When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to our own work. From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows and armour. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried the materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. And each of the builders wore his sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials and the rest of the people, "The work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us here. Our God will fight for us." So we continued the work with half the men holding spears from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. At that time I also said to the people, "Let every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night, so that they can serve us as guards by night and workers by day." Neither I nor my brothers nor my men nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water. Okay, so Chapter 4, the more I read it, the more I realise that there's a lot of content here. And maybe this will be an introduction to chapter 4, because there's a lot that this chapter says about prayer. A lot about sounding the trumpet, a lot about being on guard and watching and praying. There's a lot of imagery here that we could apply to prayer. And so maybe next week I'll develop that idea a little bit more. But tonight I want to look at the subject of discouragement, because the builders were discouraged. And the subject of discouragement is important because discouragement is universal. Everybody, put their hand up who has never been discouraged. You know, we're all discouraged now and again. And it's something that we all experience. It's a common experience. So we need to look at this, because discouragement is something that affects us all. But secondly, we also need to look at this subject of discouragement, because discouragement recurs again and again. What do I mean by this? Well, you may win triumph over a discouragement on day one, but by day two, there is another challenge that comes its way. Another discouragement that has to be defeated. And then the third day, you might wake up in victory, having defeated the discouragements of Monday and Tuesday, and then by Wednesday, there is another discouragement that is hitting your face. So discouragement is something that needs to be stood up to again and again and again. So discouragement is universal, it's recurring, and discouragement can be contagious. We've all had that experience where we've been part of a team, when somebody has come in and they've been a little bit of a wet blanket, and they've said something that has dampened the spirits of the people there. And they come in and I use the example of, maybe you're on a football team and there's 10 of you in the dressing room ready to play football, and the 11th came in and says, "Oh, by the way, lads, do you remember the last time we played this team, we lost 10-0. And it's a discouragement. Suddenly you're there all fired up to win the game, but then you remember that you lost 10-0 before that person reminds you, and suddenly that contagion has swept through the whole team, and instead of one person being discouraged, all 11 people are discouraged. And discouragement can be devastating, because it can stop our work. We can give up. We can give up on building the wall. We can say, we've had enough. We've come so far, but we're not going to go any further. So this whole subject of discouragement needs to be addressed. Let's have a look at the way that discouragement is seen in Nehemiah 4. The first thing that I want you to notice is that there was ridicule. What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? Even a fox climbing up on it will break down their wall of stones. And this is the third time that Sanballat has turned up on the scene, that we've met Sanballat in four chapters. And each time he's brought discouragement. And here we have ridicule. Ridicule, it is said, is the language of the enemy. Those who stand bravely when shot at will collapse when they are laughed at, said somebody. And the enemy often ridicules the servants of God. If we think of some examples in the scripture, we think about Goliath and the whole Philistine army ridiculing David when he said that he was going to stand up and fight him. Ridicule. We see that the soldiers and that the crowd mocked Jesus. They ridiculed Jesus when he was on the cross. And here there is ridicule. And people can ridicule us. What? You? There aren't many of you that's going to make a lot of difference in this village. What, you? You're going to have a church building in this building here, and you're going to have a ministry centre here? What, you must be joking. You haven't got the money. Who do you think you are? And people can ridicule us as a church. People can ridicule us as believers. You don't know what you're talking about. I was thinking about ridicule. Why is ridicule so powerful? It's because sometimes ridicule sort of just sows that seed of doubt in your mind. There's often in the ridicule, there's an element of truth that you just latch onto that is sort of that killer blow that makes you want to be discouraged. So, for example, the Jews here would have been discouraged because Sanballat was saying, "You feeble Jews. What about this wall that you're building? Even a fox can knock it over." And no doubt the Jews, who we looked at last time, the people that were rebuilding the wall, they were the priests, they were the perfumers. They weren't wall builders. They weren't stonemasons. And they might be thinking, yeah, we are a little bit feeble, aren't we? Perhaps we don't know what we're doing. We're not professionals. And that ridicule twists the sword. Sometimes when people come to us and we say that we're going to do this, and they say, "Well, where are you going to get the money from? You haven't got much money." And we look at the money in the bank and we say, "No, we ain't got a lot of money, have we?" And then they say, "Who do you think you are to do this? Who do you think you are to..." I remember this when we started the cafe. "Who do you think you are to run the cafe? You've never run a cafe before. The most that I had ever done was make beans on toast." And so the ridicule thrown back at you, saying, "Well, yes, I'm not a chef. I can't do this. I can't do this." And that could be a discouragement. Ridicule discourages. This is something that we see as a source of discouragement in this chapter. Next thing that I want you to notice is threats from all sides. "But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites and the peoples of Ashdod heard the repairs of Jerusalem's wall had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come in and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it." Now what I want you to see here is that there were pressure from all sides. When all these people are mentioned, Sanballat was to the north, Ashdod was to the west, Tobiah and the Ammonites were to the east, and the Arabs were to the south. So the discouragements, the threats, were from all corners. And this is a characteristic of discouragement, is because you can get up in the morning, you'll get a big bill through the door. That's a discouragement. But then mid-morning your car will break down, your car won't start, then you'll cut your finger, then there'll be trouble in the family, then there'll be something else, then there'll be something else. Discouragement usually really sets in when there's one pressure after another, after another, after another, when you are cornered with problems, when there's threats from all sides. This is a characteristic here, multiple pressures from multiple angles. And I wonder whether we can identify with this idea, because we have that expression in our language, "When it rains, it always pours." Or, "I don't know how much more I can take of this." Because there is multiple threats from different angles. So in this instance, in Nehemiah, they were discouraged because Sanballat was to the north, the Arabs were to the south, Ashdod to the west, Tobiah and the Ammonites to the east. Discouragement from all angles. And when, as we witness, when as we seek to build the church, there might not be just one discouragement from over there, but there'll be another discouragement from over here, and over there, another discouragement. And just as you think you're recovering from discouragement there, there'll be another discouragement. So pressures from all sides, pressures from all angles. And then there was fatigue. "Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, 'The strength of the laborers is giving out.'" So if we look at the history then, they were rebuilding the wall, they were all enthusiastic. We remember at the tail end of Nehemiah 3 that they built with their whole hearts. They were very zealous in the rebuilding of the wall, and they were going great clappers. They were working hard. And you've got to remember, they were probably doing their day jobs as well as this. So it's a bit like somebody who was You see these programs on the television where this man and wife decide to build, buy a clapped out old house, and they said they're going to do it, they're going to restore it. Restoration project. There's plenty of those silly programs on the telly, isn't there? Restoration project. And the man, to save money, goes to work during the day, but when he gets home and after he's had his tea, he does some DIY in his spare time in the evening and works weekends. Keeps going. Burns the candle at both ends. And so a very similar kind of situation here is that, you know, they had their own day jobs to address as well as rebuilding the wall. And so there was fatigue setting in. They were physically drained. It says that the wall had been built to half of its height. They started off great. First couple of laps they got plenty of energy, but now that they were halfway round, they felt their energy beginning to wane. And I wonder whether it's like this when I was at school. I don't know whether you do running round the track any at school. Do you do running round the track? No? Don't they do that at school nowadays?
We don't have a track.
Oh, we don't have a track at Honley. All right, okay. So anyway, when I was at school, there was a running track. Yeah, I think it was a 400 metre lap. And then you did the 1500 metres, which was sort of 3 3/4 laps. And I remember doing that. Wasn't very nice at all. But I always remember at school, there was this lad, when all the class was on the start line and the teacher was going to fire the pistol and we're off, there was this lad that went like the clappers for the first two laps. There he goes, going round and round. He shot right in front of the bunch of the runners. He was well ahead. Well ahead. All of us were sort of just very gently going behind. Well, after two laps, he'd exhausted himself. And he started walking. And then everybody overtook him. I don't know whether he came in last or what, but, you know, you get the idea is that he started off quick, but he didn't pace himself. All right, so there was the fatigue that was causing discouragement, but then also a sense of overwhelming. There is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. So much rubble that we can't rebuild the wall. So there's a number of applications here. I've read a number of things that people have had to say about this. A lot of people say, or some people say, that they were overwhelmed by the rubbish. A bit like when they built the Channel Tunnel. I looked at this earlier on in this week. When they cut all the chalk out for the Channel Tunnel, they dumped all the chalk. They got it on a train and took it all out and dumped it out into a little bit by Dover, and now there's a 73-acre wildlife reserve made up from all of this chalk that's dumped there from the Channel Tunnel. See, the thing is that when they were carving out the Channel Tunnel, they had to get rid of the rubbish because they couldn't make progress if there was all the rubbish away. So there was trains that took all the rubbish out, dumped it in the sea, and like I say, now there's this 73-acre wildlife reserve. And a lot of people that I've read this week have said, okay, if you're building the wall, if you're building the church, you've got to get rid of the rubbish. Because the rubbish will hinder you. And that's right, so bad habits, sin in our lives that we're aware of that needs to be dealt with, we need to get rid of it because it will hinder us, it will drag us back. Let us throw off everything that hinders us, says the writer to the Hebrews. So the sin that needs to be thrown away, the sin that needs to be got rid of, moved out the way so that we can concentrate on the task ahead. But I reckon there's another application. And what they looked at was, when they looked at the stones, they saw rubbish. They saw rubbish, not material to rebuild the wall. See, what they saw is they saw rubble. Stones. Stones to build the wall. Stones to sort of fill in the wall was 9 foot wide. So it wasn't just nice little square oblong bricks that they were building with. It would need to be infilled, and they would infill it with rubble. So it wasn't rubbish. And often that's true in life. We look around us and we see rubbish, but actually we fail to see the potential. So let me give you another illustration. When you're buying a house and looking around properties, you either see it as it is and get discouraged, or see it as what it can become and be encouraged. I don't think the former occupants of our home where we now live would recognise it, because when we bought it, it was a pretty run-down house. The windows were rotten, the central heating didn't work, and every wall had wood chip on it, and it was painted 1970s brown and orange. So we could have called it rubbish. We could have gone in and said, drafty old windows, rubbish. Central heating that doesn't work, rubbish. Wood chip on all the walls, rubbish. This is a rubbish house. We could have walked away and been discouraged. But when we went into the house, we didn't see the rubbish, we saw what it could become. See the difference? We didn't see it as a rubbish house, we saw it as a house with potential. In other words, we didn't get bogged down in our circumstances, we don't get bogged down in our circumstances, but we look up and we see what God can make from our circumstances. They look down instead of looking up. Fear was also a discouragement. Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. We cannot rebuild the wall. Fear. 10 times over. They're going to attack us. Not just attack us once, did they say, but they're going to attack us. 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 10 times. They are going to attack us. And great fear came. They were discouraged by fear. We cannot rebuild the wall. There was ridicule, there was pressure from all sides, there was fatigue, there was a sense of overwhelming that brought them to the conclusion that they could not build the wall. The marks of Sanballat and Tobiah rang in their minds. I don't think we can rebuild this wall very quickly. It is going to take years. We are weak and feeble. It does look like a fox could knock it over. Pressure from all sides made them fear attack. They were tired and worn out, couldn't see the wood for the trees. They'd received the call. They'd started out well, but now they weren't so sure. The discouragement here was a fear. There was discouragement here, and there was a very real fear. A fear of failure. Quickly then, as I've identified the causes of their discouragement, let's consider the remedies for the discouragement. Talk to God. Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Now, maybe we might elaborate on this another occasion. Maybe next week we'll go on into this and his prayer. But actually, when you read the prayer, it's spitting venom, isn't it? Lord, sort them out. May their insults turn back on themselves. Really what he was saying is, Lord, give them a taste of their own medicine. So it was quite an aggressive prayer. It was quite an upset prayer. It was quite a, I'm not so sure it's the kind of prayer that we ought to pray. I'm just trying to see you there. There's an angry prayer that he vented upon God. And God could take it. And God can take our anger. God can take our frustrations. And maybe this is the thing that I want you to understand here, is that he took his frustrations to God and didn't vent his frustration and anger on Sanballat and Tobiah and the Ammonites and the Arabs and everybody else that was against them. And here's a principle that when we're discouraged, let's talk to God about it. Let's not retaliate and try to get even with the people that are coming against us. I was talking to the vicar at St. Mary's, Liam, earlier on in this week. I don't know how it came up in conversation, but it did. But he was telling me that the one of the vicars in the Leeds diocese had vented his anger on Facebook about his church leadership. His church leadership had made a financial decision that, or they were blocking some kind of financial decision, and he vented it on Facebook. Oh, I've got the worst leadership in the Church of England in my church, blah blah blah, this, that and the other. And Liam had said that the bishop had sent a letter, a circular around to everybody in the diocese to say, when you get upset with people, please do not post it on Facebook, because I will not be able to help you. That was the bishop. And maybe that's true, isn't it? Because sometimes when we retaliate against our enemies, we start to say things that we hoped that we hadn't. We say things that we later regret. And and Nehemiah did not waste his words trying to answer these people. He was angry. He was frustrated. And he went to God. So talk to God. Hear us, O God, for we are despised. Reorganize your priorities. But we pray to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Therefore I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears and bows. What Nehemiah did, he responded to the threat in the sense that he closed the gaps on the wall. He adapted to the circumstances to alleviate the discouragement. My brother was with me earlier on in the week, and he was talking to me about his son, who is working in a coffee shop outside of Edinburgh, an artisan coffee shop. And he works for this rather eccentric Australian lady who is the owner of the independent coffee shop. And the business isn't doing so well. And he noticed that when he was working, a lot of people were coming into the cafe and not only asking for a cup of coffee, but they were asking for soup. Lots of people were asking for soup. So he said to this eccentric Australian owner of this independent coffee shop, don't you think that it might be a good idea if we put soup on the menu, bring in some more money? And she said, I know I'm discouraged about the takings at the minute, but when I was in Australia and had a coffee shop, soup didn't sell. And, you know, my brother's son thought to himself, well, that's Australia. This is Scotland. We're about 20 degrees colder in Scotland, especially where we are. The thing is that this lady was unwilling to adapt to the circumstances. And sometimes we have to adapt to the circumstances. We go out and we do an alpha at the Flying Ferret, for example, and you think, well, that didn't quite work. So you do something else. You do a Christianity Explored. And you say, well, that didn't quite work either. So you try something else. So when you come and witness personally to somebody and you hit a brick wall, you try and share the gospel with them and they're not interested, instead of being discouraged and giving up, you think, well, I'm going to try a different approach. I'm going to approach this from a different angle. Nehemiah addressed the problems. He pulled people to cover the gaps. He saw the vulnerabilities and addressed them. And in so doing, he addressed the discouragement. And reorganizing your priorities, perhaps this is where fatigue can be addressed. In the example that I gave earlier about the person running around the laps, being exhausted after the first two laps and running out of steam, the way you address that is to pace yourself. And maybe you need to address things in your life and you say, well, okay, well, I'm tired all the time. Well, maybe you need to cut something out. Maybe you need to tr- trim a hobby. Maybe you have to trim a leisure pursuit. Don't trim your worship, by the way. Don't anybody sort of say to yourself, well, I'm too tired. Ian says, if you're too tired, stay at home. Don't bother coming to church. No. If you're that tired, you need to address other things in your life. Worship comes first and is the priority. Realize that you're not alone. See, why would you post people together in families? Because when one person gets discouraged in the family, the other member can lift them up. Posting them by families. What does Hebrews 3:13 says? Encourage one another day after day. And lastly, tonight, remember who God is. Nehemiah says, do not be afraid of them in verse 14. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. Remember that you're anointed. Remember that God has called you to do this. Remember that God is your strength. Remember that God is the one who will protect you. You do not have to be frightened of those people. Our God is awesome. There may be few of us, but God will strengthen us. There may be a big task before us, but nothing is impossible with God. They may be laughing at you, but hey, they laughed at me, says Jesus. Remember that God is awesome. He is all powerful. He is the one who has called us. He is the one who will protect us. He is the one who will vindicate us. He is the one who will empower us. He is the one who will give us courage to keep on building and not give up. Fear, discouragement, can be very disabling. It can freeze us to the spot. It can stop us from building. Discouragement can stop us from building. Fear can stop us from building. In 1937, they built the Golden Bridge across San Francisco Bay. I can't remember how long it took, but no doubt you can go on Tinternet and have a look. Halfway through, they had lost, I can't remember how many people they had lost, 23 men had fallen to their death as they built the bridge. Biggest suspension bridge in the country, in the world at the time. 23 people had died. They were halfway through. And 23 people had died, and every other worker, their productivity had slowed right up because they also were frightened of falling into the icy waters beneath them. And so, you know, the productivity slowed right up and there was a very slow progress in building the wall because no longer were people confident in their work. They were fearful in their work. They were discouraged. It slowed them right down. See the parallel here. And what the builders of the bridge thought that they'd do, or what they did, is that they built the biggest net that had ever been built or made in the whole world and stretched it underneath each area where the men were working. And so when the men, if they were to fall, they'd be caught by this safety net underneath. When the men knew that there was a safety net underneath them, productivity shot up so high that the bridge was built in 3/4 of the time that it was expected to be built in. Why? Because there was confidence in the net. Why do I tell you that story? Because underneath us are the everlasting arms of Jesus. And we needn't be frozen to the spot. We needn't be frightened of anything because we know he's always there to catch us and protect us. And with that knowledge that God is there, it should give us the courage and the confidence to work with all our hearts and not be discouraged.